In our continuing Best of the Best Journeys podcast series, we are reposting a most fascinating conversation with Kate Crawford, recorded back in 2016 when she was Assistant Curator of American Art at the Nelson Atkins Museum in Kansas City, Missouri. Since her show was first published, it has garnered more than 5,000 downloads. Come along and join me for a memorable and timeless conversation about American portraiture back in the 1800s with Kate Crawford.
My name is Kate Crawford.
What's closest to your heart in the American genre?
Well, so my research really concentrates on early American art. I'm particularly interested in colonial American portraiture. Mm-hmm. It's a subject that's really been fairly understudied, and so I've delved into that in some depth. But I really love American art across time. I mean, it's hard to pick favorites. Somebody else asked me my favorite piece in the collection, and I struggle even with that.
If you don't mind, dig a little deeper on colonial portraiture.
Sure.
When I think of it, one of the things that's most fascinating to me are the kids in the picture.
Yes. Sometimes seemingly creepy children in those colonial American portraits, absolutely. The flat modeling that I think itinerant limners often engaged in, occasionally creepy visages. But those portraits are also really poignant documents in terms of colonial American families. They tell important stories about lineage in the family, so I find them fascinating.
Do you think time, place, contextually, that they understood that genealogical recordation that they were doing?
Yes, I do, and I certainly think that's an important function of those portraits. Some scholars have argued it's the primary function of those portraits. Mm-hmm. Portraits of children in particular is a little bit of a complicated subject within that broader body of research. Mm-hmm. It's really obvious why you would paint a patriarch, and you might want, you know, your father or your grandfather represented if you were his grandson.
Paying homage to, yes.
Absolutely, and also representing a line of wealth and sort of an established family in a place. Mm-hmm. Portraits of children do some of that, but they could also be memorials if a child was then perhaps sent from the British American colonies abroad to be educated in Britain, or because rates of child mortality were so high, they could sort of be preserving a sense of a family that could be so easily disrupted.
That is a really good point, because infant mortality and even childhood mortality was so high that the odds were that two out of the four kids in a portrait would be dead before they're 18 or 19.
Absolutely, before they're 10 or 11.
Yeah.
The rates of survival go up exponentially with every age you increase between 0 and 10.
Your odds get better and better.
Much better, yeah. Because you kind of, you know, you become seasoned to disease in a sense, right? Mm-hmm. You become more acclimatized to the environment that you're living in, and it's a rough environment.
Let's dig a little deeper, because for years I have, looking from the outside in mm-hmm. at portraiture of colonial American period. It fascinates
sure.
me. And yet, you know, I've never taken a class in it or never studied
right. Few
it.
Few people have.
Yeah. Looking from the outside is just physiologically that the anatomy of the kids, the size of their head versus the body. There's been some quandaries and questions and whatnot. What, tell us about what you know about that, just that whole proportion.
Right. Well, I think insofar as the lack of anatomical accuracy that you might see in some early American portraits, there are a couple of things that I can point to. Some is that some of these artists just are not as skilled as the artists, say, working in London mm-hmm. in the same period, if we're talking about the 18th century. Others are. We have a beautiful portrait by Charles Wilson Peale of two children upstairs in the American galleries here at the Nelson Atkins. And those children are really beautifully painted, but you still do see a slightly larger face, and that's because Peale's primarily focused on a good likeness. Capturing that face is really important. And then the other aspect of the portrait that he's most invested in is capturing dress, because that's how you show wealth in 18th century America. So it's a matter of what is most important to his patrons.
In pretty much every portraiture piece, it was commissioned where the people posing put their finest on, and it wasn't in a case of some artists where they had like the generic background and they infilled the faces, right?
Right. Well, you may have had a generic background. Really depends on the portrait. They may also be generic garments. They might not be wearing things that they own. Probably in the case of portraits of the most elite people, they're wearing the things that they own. But if they can afford a portrait and maybe can't afford to look as wealthy as they'd like to, that's a real public presentation of self, and the artist might own outfits and things that they could supply to the sitter.
What are some of the stories? What are some of the things that you have learned from, you know, looking back in time through these paintings?
Oh my gosh. That's a huge question.
We'll just condense 10 years of your life here.
Yeah. That's exactly what you're asking me to do. I've learned so many things. My personal research really focuses on portraiture and mobility in the British Atlantic. That's something a lot of people haven't talked about, but one of the things I realized about portraitists themselves is just how mobile they are and how the extent to which their profession really relies on that mobility throughout the British Atlantic world. I've also learned a lot about 18th century Jamaica, which, I mean, if you're talking about a niche field within a niche field, right? 18th century Jamaica and portraits there is about as niche as it gets.
This is before the demise of slavery?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. This is colonial Jamaica, really even before the American Revolution. And I feel like the portraits I've studied, at least for me, have really unlocked, I don't want to say secrets, but things, social parts about the culture in Jamaican society that I don't think historians have been able to access through documents.
Here's an example. This is fascinating.
The place of white women in 18th century Jamaica, I think it's surprising for people to see white women painted in as many double portraits as they are, in part because the demographics just don't seem to show that if you're looking at the documentary evidence. But there is clearly a place for white women in that society, and representing white women in that society is very important for some reason. You know, in part, they're trying to represent the stability of a very unstable slave society.
What you're alluding to is that what was happening in British colonial Jamaica was distinct from even somewhere else in the Caribbean?
Absolutely. Not only distinct from other places in the Caribbean, but certainly distinct from, say, the Low Country even, which is, colonial South Carolina is a place we think of as being in some ways very similar to the colonial Caribbean. Ultimately, they're very different in other ways.
The paintings, in what ways do they talk to you? How does it work as kind of time travel for you?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yes, that is a huge question. Everything I do starts with close looking. Well, it could be, in a way, time travel. But, you know, through careful looking and close observation, a painting can tell you so much, not only by way of what's represented, but by way of choices the artist's making. For instance, I have spent some time both here at Nelson and elsewhere thinking about materiality in paintings, the actual paint being used on canvas or on paper. We have a wonderful conservation staff here, and through the work of our conservators in conjunction with our curators, you can learn all kinds of things about the choices an artist is making because of their society or because of the surroundings that they're painting in.
And again, you alluded to this earlier. It's one thing to be a historian and to read the writings, the paper, the words.
Sure.
But you're reading images.
Yeah, absolutely. Visual culture so often not only shapes history in the moment, but can really lend a sort of complementary perspective on the history that you're getting through the documentary record. And that's something I've always been interested in, of course.
Yeah. And you always wonder about the people posing for the portraits and the painters, if they were thinking of us in the future at all.
Oh, I do wonder that, and I imagine they couldn't be thinking about me, probably, investigating their lives. But I do wonder, and I wonder sort of, going back to what we were talking about with lineage, how far into the future they were hoping these portraits would function as really documents of their lineage. And working on colonial American portraits, talking about colonial American portraits, I think so often in the 19th century, so many of these objects were discarded or forgotten by families that didn't need them anymore to serve that way.
But again, at that moment in time, when they hired the artist, there was a sense of permanence or invincibility or living on forever.
Absolutely. Those portraits were a way to put their stamp, I think, on their surroundings, on their landscape.
So if you take it back to the beginnings, they're related to the cavemen and the cave paintings.
I guess you could take it back that far. I haven't, but maybe I should. That could be my next project.
Yeah, there you go. That was probably the best they could do in the cave days, you know.
Maybe. Those are pretty incredible paintings unto themselves, too. So.
But that is interesting. If you think about it, there were no real self-portraits or portraiture of the people as much as the objects or the hunting or the chickens or turkeys.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true. And, you know, I can't really think of when the first self-portrait is made, but there's definitely an emerging sense of identity and the importance of representation of self and other, I think, that you see across the trajectory of art history broadly.
And when do you think that really evolved and started developing?
Oh, I don't know. Gosh.
Renaissance?
Yeah, I think things change in the Renaissance, certainly. You definitely see portraits prior to that, but that sort of evolving conception of self in particular, and I'm thinking about the emergence of self-portraiture. I think the Renaissance is an easy place to take it.
Well, I just took you into outer space. I was supposed to be talking with you about the Nelson Atkins. So let's weave back before we're done in what is most touching and what you think is most, oh my God, about here.
Everything. You know, I moved here 2 years ago from Philadelphia, and I was thrilled about this job. We have an incredible American collection at the Nelson Atkins Collection of American Art. What I could not have prepared myself for was just how spectacular this museum is as an encyclopedic museum. We have everything you could want. We've got great ancient art. We've got a great impressionist painting, a great modern and contemporary collection. And I feel lucky just to be surrounded by those objects and the people who support them every day.
And there is a disconnect. I've been here before, and obvious reason why I came back.
Sure.
I was just recently in Detroit, awesome, Chicago,
yeah.
San Francisco, and Kansas City.
Yes.
I mean, truly, yes, you take it from there.
Well, we can be placed on that list of museums, I think, and not as many people maybe know that as should. So I don't.
Isn't that, they don't.
Yeah.
I mean, how often I... People go, why are you going to Kansas City? You know, what are you going to see? And they just kind of glaze over when you say museum or gallery.
Yeah, I think they do, but it's really a hidden treasure. I mean, we have a collection of 45,000 objects, and they're exceptional objects. It's not only a collection with great depth, but a real richness in terms of standout pieces, masterpieces.
In your ancient Chinese art in all forms is foremost around America.
Yeah, perhaps the best collection of East Asian art and South Asian art in the United States.
Only because I have to leave and you have to get back to work. I really, really appreciate the time.
Oh, it was my pleasure. This was fun. My name is Kate Crawford, and for further information, you can go to nelson-atkins.org.
Thank you, Kate.
Is that good?
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Kansas City, Missouri.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, iTunes, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
This is Roseanne Cash, and I'm sitting here with Tom Wilmer. Please support your local NPR station.
I listen to WNYC in New York, and in fact, NPR is all I listen to. If I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.
What you've become.